This ROFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Greetings today. You're listening to a program called Avant Gardening, coming from the Wairarapa in New Zealand. And we have three presenters, myself, Margaret, Anna-Marie.
Hello.
And Marnie.
Hi.
And these series of programs, we've been looking at different systems of growing food, the effect on gardening with the changing weather, and giving our own viewpoints sometimes. Hopefully we've done a bit more research and everything. So today we're going to continue with different farming methods, and we're going to mention Korean farming. Anna-Marie, you've been doing the reading.
Yes, Korean natural farming. It's a bit unusual. It really is. So you remember we talked about bokashi?
Yes.
A couple of programs
ago, right.
About the composting thing where they were fermenting things in your house, in your bucket. It was just like a little compost system. And then they used this fungi inoculated rice bran. And you thought, well, where did that come from? That's just downright bizarre. This is where it came from. This is Korean natural farming, where it's kind of like kimchi, which is the fermented food that I think comes out of Korea, doesn't it? Kimchi?
Yeah, it does.
Very big on fermented food over there. And they seem to ferment everything, including their garden. It really is quite bizarre. So it's an organic agricultural method, and it takes advantage of the indigenous microorganisms. There's an awful lot of acronyms in Korean natural farming. So that's IMO. And so then you've got, within these indigenous microorganisms, you've got bacteria, fungi, nematodes, protozoa, and then that produces a very rich soil, and it yields high output without the use of pesticides or herbicides or any other chemicals. It's supposed to be, it emphasises self-sufficiency, and it limits external inputs and heavily relies on recycled farm waste, except that they don't use animal manure.
Interesting, because we've always talked you need manure somewhere along the line.
This is really interesting. They don't use any animal waste at all. And I don't think they've got human waste back in there. What I want to know is, what are they doing with the ever-increasing pile of goat manure and hay and things? It really is quite bizarre.
Maybe they're making methane or something.
I don't know. But anyway, so the fundamental thingy of Korean natural farming is that they're trying to strengthen these biological aspects of plant growth. So they're trying to sort of increase the metabolism of what's going on with these, what do they call them, indigenous microorganisms. So indigenous means from the land.
Yes, from the land.
You get these things by taking one of the ways that they do this is because they have a lot of, sorry, I'm rambling, I haven't got Marnie here to drag me back into this. Yes. Sorry, it's my ADHD. Goodness.
Okay.
But I should let you go in a straight line here. What do they use? They use the nutrients contained within the seeds, and then they use the indigenous microorganisms. They avoid commercial fertilisers. They don't do any tilling, and then they don't use agricultural waste either. They have a whole bunch of fermented things. So they will ferment plant juice.
And then feed that back into the soil.
And then they dilute it a little bit, like this is where there's a slight crossover with biodynamic farming, where they dilute it down to 500 to 1,000 times.
Oh, yes,
the thingy. So you've got this fermented fermented fish waste, which I can see you raising your little eyebrows at that little thought.
Yes, but we do use fish in the garden.
We do, that's right. So that's got special microorganisms.
But doesn't that count as animal waste? I thought...
No, this is manure. They don't use animal manure. So they do use fish frames.
All right,
and they'll use, and they'll pulverise that up and then ferment that. And then they dilute it and then they wave it around all over the soil. They will use a fermented rice bran. They add in brown sugar, or jaggery, is that the name of the brown sugar? So they use that a lot as a sort of a starter with some of these things, like the fermented plant juice. You'll whack in the sugar as well and then let that do its thing. It can go really well, and you get this lovely little organism thing. And it can go really badly, where you can get this kind of, white mold's good, black or green mold.
Not so much.
Not so much. No, that's a chuck it away and start again. The people that I've seen doing this on YouTube, it is very, very involved. There's about, I think, 7 or 8 different types of fermented fertilizers that you make, and then depending on whether it's a growth part of the plant crop,
okay,
or whether
you,
it's a
different times, yeah,
you use
yeah.
it as a different foliar or a ground spray mm-hmm. or whatever.
Yeah, so you lost me right there at complicated. I'm very much an advocate of if plants manage to grow for hundreds and millions of years without the need to apply some sort of very specific fertilizer and whatever, then I completely believe that they can probably carry on doing that on their own.
You're kind of more the Japanese natural farmer.
I'm very much the no, don't touch it unless you have to approach
right.
farming.
Yes, I'm a lot more kind of, I've just got to whack that with a pair of secateurs kind of farmer. But
actually, funnily enough, I pruned my peach trees the other day. And as I was pruning now, I was thinking, I'm taking the Anna Marie approach to pruning here, which basically involves lopping the top half off the trees.
Yes.
yes. Yeah. Anyway, so to get back to the farming, yeah, I think, as with all things, that some of these systems make things much more difficult than they need to be and don't necessarily produce the results from that amount of effort, if you will. If I can produce something by preparing a bed, putting some compost on it, planting in, and then just taking care of the weeds every now and again,
yeah,
easy.
Yep.
No real dramas there. If I'm going to have to do something more than that, something more involved in that, something that means that I have to buy something in perhaps, then I'm a lot less interested in that because, you know, yes, yeah. I want to produce my own food, but I don't want to make it any harder than it needs to be.
No, because there's a little bit of follow the money on this as well. You can go out and you can buy these little supplements, the preparations. It's a bit like, Preparation H. Not Preparation H. That's a hemorrhoid cream. It is, what is it, Biodynamics? Preparation.
Oh, it's the 500.
And yeah, 500. That's what
it
is.
Yeah, 101.
Yes, yes. It's a little bit like that where you can buy these things and get them shipped to you. Which I'm always a little bit dubious about. That always makes my eyes narrow down just a tiny bit because you kind of go follow the money on this. To me, it seems very, very complicated. I don't know why they don't want to use animal manure. That, to me, just doesn't make sense.
And I think there's a fundamental difficulty there as well. When you talk about not using animal manure, and I know that we've touched on this briefly in the past about what happened, particularly in the UK after the Second World War, because they had got rid of so many animals, because though they weren't putting animal manure back onto the land, which was traditionally how they'd always done fertilising, so cow manure, pig manure, sheep manure, whatever it was.
Yeah, people.
Yeah, whatever it was. After the Second World War, when you got into the late 40s, the land was so exhausted.
Yeah,
they were struggling to produce any food, and that was when the Americans started shipping a lot of food into the UK because the UK could no longer feed itself because the land was completely exhausted. So if you're advocating a system which doesn't include livestock, doesn't include animal manure, I'm struggling to see, particularly if you are talking about producing something and then taking that thing out of the system, so you're removing
nutrients
from the system. And I am struggling to see how that can be self-sustaining.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, I think it does obviously improve the soil enormously, and it will make the plants healthier just because it's using the the natural organisms and bits and pieces. But I just kind of do wonder what they do with these giant piles of manure.
We've been worrying about poo all the way through these programs.
We've
talked about
it.
Serious. I mean, I know what's happening next door. If you don't keep clearing it, the pile gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
Well, they do that with horses because of the worm burden.
Are you telling me we've now got all that in our garden?
No, only with the horses. I'm just teasing.
I was thinking of my Irish relatives and who have dairy farms, and they, of course, they house their animals during winter because it's so wet, and then they put all that what's it called, the slush, from the
slurry
back onto the fields.
And that's traditionally the way that it's always been done.
So it grows.
So you're returning that fertility to the fields. But if you don't have that step, you can have all the microorganisms in the soil that you like, but if there's no let's call it nutrition in the soil, you know, the minerals and, yeah. and all the other things that the compost that's on there. If you don't have that, then there's nothing for those microbes to convert for the plants. Yeah. So the microbes are essential. They are that transport system between what's in the soil and the plants to make that accessible to the plant. You can have your transport system there, but if there's nothing in the soil to transport, that's not going to help the plants.
Yeah. Mm. So the Korean one now doesn't have waste in it, poo. I keep calling it poo. We should call it what we can. What's
manure.
Another manure is a much yeah. more yeah. And, a better way, but I like
a grown-up way.
We all know it's poo, you know.
it doesn't use animal manure.
Yes, because you mentioned we weren't going to talk about biodynamics because we have talked about, but they do use animal
they
manure.
Do. They do. When I was reading up about that Korean natural farming, I thought, oh, this is actually reasonably similar to biodynamic. And the thing that made me think about that was because they were diluting things.
Yes, and they were making up these formulas and whatever.
And the formulas, that's right. And then I thought, actually, no, it's actually really different because one of the things with, I think it's 501, preparation 501, is they use...
This isn't biodynamics. Yeah.
In the biodynamics, they use the animal manure stuffed into a horn.
Yes.
Yeah. Preferably the lactating female cow, that obviously is female of his lactating, goodness, and then you bury it in the ground and then you dig that up and you do things. So it's similar because of the microorganisms in there, other than the woo-woo that's involved in the biodynamics.
You see, that makes sense to me. So if you have the opportunity to access a resource like big piles of manure,
except
why would you not use that?
But it's not, because they then dilute that down to 1 in 500.
Are you talking about now? We're back to biodynamics.
But if they go, that's only one use of that.
Oh yes, yeah.
I'm a great believer in using the resources that you've got access to. So if you've got a property next door that has horses and has vast amounts of horse poo, I know people who won't use horse poo because it promotes dock. As a weed.
Oh, dock's great.
But I know people who will not use it on their garden because they believe that it brings weeds and all these other things.
My response to that is, I don't have to argue.
You've got weeds
that.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But also, just compost it. Hot compost it, and that gets rid of all the problems.
Just use
but
the dock.
Why would you not use the resources that you That's have right. available? The resources that are on your doorstep. Rather than importing stuff in from wherever.
Yeah. I think we have a slightly difficult view of weeds. I remember my horticulture teacher from years and years and years ago telling me that there's no such thing as a weed. It's just a plant in the wrong place.
Yeah.
Or a plant that hasn't had its attributes discovered.
I'm going to tell that to my daffodils that are just about drowning and murdered by a large patch of weeds. I had a talk to them yesterday. But anyway.
So there are, I mean...
No, but that's just being...
I have, other than buttercup, I have not found a use for buttercup yet. Permaculturists will say, well, it's actually telling you that soil needs more lime. And I go, yes, I can see it coming up in my lime path here.
Yeah.
Or that the soil's a bit sour or that it's very damp or whatever. So it's a kind of an indicator weed. And then they kind of go a bit quiet because there really are no uses for buttercup.
I think we're going to have to do a bit of research of where is all the manure going to
in Korea.
It would be a really interesting. No,
what are they doing?
I mean, do they have? Because I mean, I just mentioned in passing, manure and stuff also makes methane gas. So there are people who will make that sort of stuff
by digester
and make gas, which is a power source. If you manage it well and it doesn't blow up.
Indeed.
There is some wonderful...
Oh, yes, they do. Yeah, biogas, isn't it? That's right.
Yes.
Absolutely,
So maybe that's what drives some of the other things. We'll do some research.
No doubt. There are plenty of people in Korea who are quite cheerfully applying manure onto their paddocks.
Yeah, this is just Korean people. This isn't just a subset.
Okay.
But it is quite a traditional method. The chap that invented this, well, when he redefined it... he took practices that had been done for a long time in Korea and then kind of gathered them all in and defined them and gave it a name.
Yeah.
Whereas this had been going on for quite a long time. So, it's a bit like...
I'm just interested that, they're so interested in fermenting. Why ferment? Because ferment means a closed system without
anaerobic. It's anaerobic, and you've got to have exactly the right bacteria. So one of the ways they get this bacteria is they'll get a bowl of cold rice. It always starts with a bowl of cold rice, doesn't it? Take it up into the forest and leave it sitting there in the forest for a bit. I mean, this is how you get yeast. This is how they used to get yeast for ale and yeast for bread.
This is sourdough all over.
There's a reason it's sour. Anyway, so they take this bowl of rice, they stick it in the forest, all of these little organisms pop down and the fungi and the mycelium and bits and pieces because they're all floating around in the air. And then they take it home and then they're kind of hoping you haven't got the black and green stuff in there, I assume. This is where it all falls apart a little bit, is if you've got the wrong microorganisms in there, and then they kind of overpopulate and it all ends rather badly. But, you know, that's how they start these things.
Okay.
So it just seems like a lot of effort to me.
I know.
Yes. You
know?
Just whack a bit of animal when you're...
If you're going to ferment your...
I mean, bokashi.
Waste, your bokashi, or whatever it is that you're going to do, and then introduce that into the soil, really it's about creating more microorganisms, isn't it? And I can completely get behind that. But I can also get behind the whole idea of not making things difficult let's just chuck it in the compost bin or let's do some trenching, you know, putting it directly into the soil. Let's do some things which mean that you do it once and you don't have to keep going back. And,
your compost bins beside your peach trees, I was hugely inspired by that. I thought that was a brilliant idea.
Works an absolute treat.
I know, because there's no shifting, there's no turning. It's just
nothing.
Chucking it in.
Nothing. Chuck it in. Let it go.
Chuck it in. Yep.
And I do put a lot of different things in those compost bins. So, you know, I put wood ash off the fire. I put grass clippings. I put weeds. I put all sorts of things go in there. Kitchen waste. All sorts of things go into those things. And they just break down on their own. And the trees are constantly being fed all the time, which is why I've just had to go and chop them by half. Because even though the trees have only been in there for about 6 years, I think this is the second time I've done this, because they get enormous.
Yeah. I've got the same little, it's a green heritage peach, isn't it? I've got the same type. And yes, they do go berserk.
I'm actually hoping that this is getting off topic a little bit, but I'm actually hoping to be able to grow some more seedlings from these trees and then plant them out into the paddock and just see how big they get.
Oh,
well, that would be interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Do you need to worry about the sheep? Will they ring bark them? Do your sheep ring?
No, I always protect the trees.
Oh, okay, right, yeah.
Okay. But now we've gone through all these things, but the one thing, you know, you're talking about using resources and using manure a lot. People often in a town think they have no access. But, of course, I've got friends who've just moved down to Wellington. Zoodoo.
Yeah.
Now, you can buy Zoodoo. The only thing is I always say, realise that sometimes it's got a lot of seeds in it.
I don't think people get so hung up about the seeds.
No.
I mean, it's
also, I know. I was going to say, that's what we did in our first garden, which we built the house. And, you know, they clear the... When anyone builds a house, somehow or other, they think they must really destroy any kind of soil. Mm. And there's nothing there. And I think I've spoken about it before. We had to build 14 years of putting stuff in, and then we got Zoodoo in. But it does work. Yeah. It just, you know, there's a lot of growth happens.
Well,
so resources is looking around, and often on the edges of towns, there people have horses, and they have to get rid of it, you know. Or donkey manure, or you often see on the side of the road around here, bags of manure.
Horse poo, and also underneath wool sheds. I spent a lot of time underneath a wool shed.
Oh, yes. Dags.
Yes, there's the dag thing too. Yes, that's quite a new thing, the dags, because they used to sell them. Farmers now, the price on dags, it is not worth selling the dags, the transport, the fed.
So what do they do with it?
They dump them off the side of the bank, which is not necessarily the best thing to do, because they're full of nitrogen, so that all goes into the waterway. Or they will give them to people like me. So I think I just go out and gather all these dags up out of people's wool sheds and take them home and hurl them all over my food forest. They're the most fantastic.
I love this, all using your resources.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's a really... Dags and wool, I mean, you've got to be very careful with wool. I got some llama wool the other day, and I thought, oh, this will be just like Marnie's heavy sheep wool and crutchings that she gives me. So I put it on underneath my pajamas, and the next night it blew and blew and blew.
Oh, all over the place.
It was like a snow. I'm still pulling it out of my trees.
Yeah.
I put the llama wool down, and then I put stuff on. Because there's a lot of things that are... just waste, and people don't know what to do with them.
Yes.
Like dags, like crutchings. You get a lot of poo underneath wool sheds, so things okay, you can go yes. in because it, you know,
drops through the slats.
It drops through the slats, yeah, yes. when the sheep are being yeah. shorn. Or...
So, I mean, what it was bringing up is that there's a lot of waste.
Huge amount of waste.
That isn't yeah. being recycled.
And, yeah. and this to me is one of the fundamental things about sustainable farming, sustainable agriculture, sustainable gardening, where, on whatever part scale that you're growing food, is about minimising waste.
Yes.
And utilising that waste to produce more food.
Yeah.
And if you have access to something that would do that, why wouldn't you? So, like, we're talking about the dags and the wool and whatnot, makes great yeah. mulch. Lovely. If you can't sell it, use it in the garden. And I imagine there are sheep farmers from 100 years ago who would be spinning in their graves to hear people talk about using wool as a mulch in the garden because
yeah,
it had real worth at that yeah. time, which but now much less so unless you're very specific.
They've started making little weed mats out of wool.
Yes, yes.
Actually, I need to roll back a little bit too on the dag thing, is that there's a chap called the Dag Man.
Yes.
People will come and pick up your dags for you,
yes,
but you need to be within a certain area. Otherwise,
and then what
does
he do,
work.
Sell them on?
He sells them on, but as fertiliser.
Yes.
And then they'll process that into, my parents called it chicken and chips. I think it's chicken and sheep pellets or something. Yeah.
Yeah, you can buy sheep
yeah,
pellets.
Yeah, your sheep yeah. pellets that have got yeah. chicken manure in them as well for extra yeah. nitrogen.
So this is reusing resources. I mean, sorry, we've been talking all the time about systems that feed on itself, and yet we've got these blobs of unused resources
oh,
around.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's,
something
I think
cannot be sustainable if you're constantly having to bring in resources from outside. It is not sustainable.
Yeah. Mm.
If you are bringing in, if you are reusing everything, all the waste that you're producing, and if you are using other people's waste
yeah.
locally, that's great too. But unless a closed system is... In agriculture, it's almost impossible because by its very nature, agriculture produces food which goes,
yeah,
to feed
off
other
the
people.
Land. Yeah.
It goes
yeah.
off the land.
Yeah.
So it's almost impossible to do. But you can take strides towards that, towards yeah. being more self-contained, by utilising all the waste that you can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we promote home gardening to try and use what you've got. You know, you shouldn't have...
Leaves.
Green bins going
no,
out.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Absolutely
yeah.
not. No. That's a tragedy. Although I think they are making that green waste into compost.
Compost, so it does, yes.
Yeah, that's commercial enterprise. Yeah.
And it's well, there's such a lot of you know, fuel resources being used up in that process. Just
yes.
compost it at home, you know. Just
yeah.
Yeah, it's not... Having said that, you do need to have a garden that you can have a compost bin in. But it's, the leaves...
No,
people,
but we've talked about just a bin. You know, one of those, like
yeah.
you were talking under the trees. Mm. Those aren't big. They're the same size as your bin that you put your refuge, your
yeah.
other stuff in.
Mm-hmm.
And that... I know we had one in Island Bay. It was wonderful. It also was a lovely mouse... home, but beside that, because it gets warm, as we've talked
yes,
about,
yeah.
but that doesn't take up much space, so yeah,
mm.
no. So yes, we're going to probably be a shorter today, unless we didn't get on to talking about protections of things. So we can talk about that next week, because at the moment we're recording this at sort of mid-winter, coming on to spring. I don't know if one could hear the birds, but the birds are appearing in great numbers looking for food,
mm.
including all your little seedlings that are coming up.
Oh, no.
So we can talk next week about protection of young plants.
Mm. Covered gardening.
Covered gardening.
Cloches.
Yeah. And all those lovely things. And we can see how far we go with that. So I'm going to start ending off. Is there anything more you want to say about systems in gardening that are circular?
Just reuse, recycle. You know, use what you've got. That's the take home message for today.
Use what you've got
and follow the money.
Oh, well, yeah, okay. I think that's a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, okay. There we go. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
All right.